Ladies and gentlemen, a Merry Christmas to all of you that are listening as we get going here for the holiday season. Welcome to our festive edition of the Falcoholics Postgame Podcast. And depending on what you were hoping would happen with the Falcons this December, you might have gotten a wonderful gift that we've had two straight wins in a row. The Falcons are back to their winning ways as they get a 24-10 victory over the Carolina Panthers on the road, sweeping the NFC foe this season, which is great. You know, we don't like the Panthers. We enjoy taking them to Loserville and leaving them there. So, you know what? I consider it a good day indeed. I'm joined, of course, by none other than the Falcoholic, Evan Birchfield, who you know from his writing and his Instagramming over at the site. So, Evan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
Yeah, we have good things to talk about, good tidings and good cheer, unless you're hoping for a great draft pick. And in that case, not so much. They continue to tumble in the draft rankings as they get a couple of last-minute wins here to kind of end the season out on a better note than hoped. Things were looking pretty abysmal after that Green Bay game, and it seems like they've turned things around then, although the competition admittedly is not very fierce. The Arizona Cardinals are one of the worst teams in the NFL, and Carolina has been one of the worst teams playing-wise in the NFL, and they were without Cam Newton. So, you know, it's just one of those things where if you were hoping they would lose some games, then you're not probably going to get what you want, because they actually have a decent chance of ending the season on a 3-win streak, which, hey, I think is encouraging for any number of reasons, but it doesn't really help doesn't up the draft status at all. But, you know, sometimes that's just the way it goes. You just take what you can get and make do with what you have. So, Evan, talk to me a little bit about what you saw from this game and kind of what your thoughts are as we're getting close to the season being over.
Well, you saw another great Matt Ryan performance, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. The run game was going. I mean, Coleman had over 50 yards on 10 carries, and then Brian Hill late in the game.
Yeah.
Somehow averaged 14.5 yards per carry. So everything on offense was good.
Yeah, it was. That was very, very impressive. I mean, I don't know where Brian Hill's big afternoon came from, but I'm really happy it happened, because that's an interesting story, because he got drafted by the team last year and ended up getting cut into the season, and you kind of think, oh, there goes that pick. And then he comes back from Cincinnati in the beginning of right around somewhere in August, maybe right before the beginning of the season. And is inactive most of the year, obviously. And now that, you know, Ito Smith has gone down, he stepped up and now rushed for over 100 yards. Got close to, what do you have, 130-something?
Let me check. I think it was like 115.
Wow. Okay. So over 100 yards?
That's yeah, really 115.
Impressive. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So a great day for him. And I think when you look at what Atlanta's going to have to do going out from here, I think that they really need to give him a lot of consideration for especially the third running back spot, which is really, I mean, that's not a very used person on the roster, but it's a good person to have for depth. And I think he can absolutely be the third running back on the roster if this is how he's going to play when he comes in. I mean, obviously, you may not expect this consistently, but a very encouraging day for him, and I thought that he absolutely justified sticking around next year. So, you know, this is just one of those deals where guys are looking at the roster, they're seeing who works and who doesn't, and this is what you want from Brian Hill. You want to see him go out there and make the most of his time. And I thought somebody else that did that today was Bruce Irvin. I believe he had a couple of sacks today, at least two. He's got 3.5 this month. I saw on Twitter, Matt from Matt Carroll, he said that he's one of the most productive pass rushers in the league right now. So I'm pretty sure this means that the team will try to look to re-sign him, because he's been playing pretty well recently.
Yeah, he needs to, because he's already had, I believe, I put – he was the brother of the week for the Falcoholic, another article everyone should check out. But I think he has now, or he was close to it, as many, like, sacks as he did with the Raiders. And he's only been with the Falcons, what, maybe a couple of games? So he's already – we've already benefited off having him, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely say they need to look at re-signing him. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to want crazy amounts of money. He even said before, you know, that he came, before he came to Atlanta, he wanted to come home, you know, and he turned down offers from, I know the Patriots for sure. I think it might have been the Packers maybe, but I mean, you know, the Patriots are guaranteed to always make the playoffs. So he technically turned down, you know, probably more money or close to it, and go into the playoffs to be with the Falcons. So I'm sure he'd give, you know, the definition of a hometown discount for the Falcons next year.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I think that would be a great fit for him. He's kind of in the latter part of his career, but he's still playing well and he's still productive. And I think he would be a great rotational rusher for the team, if not maybe a you know, a stopgap starter for the next year or two. But I really like what I've seen from him this season. He's really, I think, come through the clutch for them when they really have needed to get something from their pass rush. You know, the pass rush looked pretty good today, and a great Jarek had a sack. And again, this Carolina offensive line is not very good. Taylor Heinicke, who was starting, obviously is not a guy who has started in the NFL before. This was not, you know, they're kind of inflating their stats and getting some big wins at the end of the year against some teams that really are not very good. Carolina's been just really playing some uninspired football over the last couple of weeks, and they don't have Cam Newton. So, you know, as you're kind of looking at the seven and trying to figure out exactly what is this team, what are they doing right now? Is it really just the fact that the Falcons are just not terrible and they're just kind of a mediocre team that's better than the bad ones? Or do you really think they're building some momentum here now that they can take into next year?
At this point in the season, you know, and especially with the injuries, they can't go understated. They're pretty much like, you know, like a wounded animal, like, you know, they're, or like a wounded lion, like, you know, they're capable of being tough, but they're hurt. So, I mean, you see like these glimpses of, you know, Deion Jones, since he's returned, I mean, he led the team in tackles. And then, you know, you see some of the bigger plays, sacks, you know, and Jack Crawford had his first career interception, which I was thrilled for. You know, Poole had an interception, and, you know, you see some of these bright spots where you're like, okay, we can build off this next season when we get Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen back. But, you know, you're also looking at the Panthers, who didn't have Cam Newton. So they were, I mean, that Heinicke, he wasn't horrible, but, you know, he pretty much was what his role is. He's like a, you know, maybe a low end quarterback, backup quarterback, high end quarterback three. Like, you know, it's hard to get too excited about it. You know, McCaffrey was really all they needed to stop, and they still kind of struggled with that. But I think that's pretty much because he's, you know, pretty good. But, you know, there's not like a whole lot to build off it, you know, in terms of next season. I mean, I guess it was nice seeing Oliver, who the Falcons drafted this year, step up and get an interception. And, you know, it is what it is. It's the Falcons win, but, you know, the season's over. So you only want to see them try. And I think, you know, last week me and you were talking about how the rest of the season, we wanted to see effort. And I'd say they definitely tried. Like, that's really the only takeaway Falcons fans should have. I mean, feel good about the W and stuff, but this team, like, tried. Like, their best players who, you know, will be around next season are the ones that really stepped up. Like, Deion Jones stepped up, Trufant stepped up, Robert Alford stepped up, KZ stepped up, Jack Crawford stepped up, Bruce Irvin, who's hopefully going to be back, stepped up. Grady was kind of silent, and that's fine. You know, he doesn't, you know, if he's not mentioned, it's probably because other people did, you know, pretty good. The offense, you know, you had Julio Jones, the top three receiving targets today were Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Mohamed Sanu, who, I mean, Sanu should be back with the team, but if he's not, they're still the top, you know, they're who you want to see as the top three catching. So I don't know. I mean, it's they tried. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, I think that that's all you can ask for at this point in the season. Like, you know, there's a question of effort that I think a lot of us were trying to kind of bat back and forth in a way. Like, what exactly was this team, you know, mentally trying to do when they were playing in these really bad games? Like, were they really giving it everything that they had? And I think that, you know, this basically comes down to, I don't know then, but I know now they're trying. And that's really a good sign to me. If they're really giving some genuine effort at a point in the season where they know they're not playing for anything but pride, I think that speaks to really Dan Quinn's ability to motivate this team at a point where they really, you know, couldn't be in a worse spot because they've half their roster feels like is injured and they're just not in a spot right now that any of us wanted them to be. And they've got, if we're disappointed, you got to know they're disappointed even more so. And I think that when you have a team like this that is so underwhelmed in the expectations people had for them, and they just, you get into that slog, especially there at the end of the year where it just doesn't seem like anything can go their way. You just wonder, is this just going to be how it is? And that has not been the case the last 2 weeks. They've come out strong against Arizona and against Carolina and have really put forth some spirited football. And I think that one of the big things you have to really take away from this is that they're not ending the season in the way that we kind of thought they were, that they're kind of over exceeding the expectations we had for what they were going to do to close the year. So I like this. I like the way that they're playing right now. I like the fact that they're giving this kind of effort because it shows that this is not a team that's culturally hurting. It shows it's not a team that is struggling with just the nucleus of who they are. I think they're just a team that has not been playing well. As Quinn said, maybe they just really have not been focused and they just really struggled when things were just not going their way to really get any sort of sparks going. But now they're playing pretty good football. And again, it's against down competition, but I still think you have to take into account that, hey, they're not doing poorly. And that's really what you want to see right now. So I think that if you're, you know, bemoaning the fact that they're not putting themselves in a position for a big draft pick, I think you also have to take into account that this is going to, this shows that there is nothing systemically wrong with this team in terms of what Dan Quinn is doing and what he's trying to build as a culture. And then knowing that that's still intact, that's huge. Because if that's intact, you can help out the coaching by switching things out. You can, you know, make some changes to your trenches, sign new guys, let some other guys go, get the salary cap in order. Those are doable things, but not having a foundation, that's really what you struggle with. And it shows to me in these last couple of games that that foundation's still intact. I thought that Alan Stark, is one of our colleagues, noted on Twitter that the unity is still there. I like that he said that there is still a unity with this team. And I think that they can get their chemistry back and they can really fix some of these problems and get some guys healthy. I really think they'll be a good football team next year. Now, again, the fact that they're playing a little bit better now may mean that the schedule will be a little bit harder, but at the same time, it's like they'd be more prepared for that. So I like where what they're doing right now. I think that it's a very promising development, and I think you have to kind of take it for what it is. And if you're sad that this might mean that they're not picking in the top five, well, it's very rare that a top five team that picks there is able to really turn it around in a really quick fashion. Usually, if you're picking that high, it means there's something fundamentally wrong with you. And I know the Cowboys a couple of years ago, and they took Zeke Elliott, that turned things around big, but that's just because that was like the one thing they were missing. It was really hurting them because it just did not have that. And then that's when Dak Prescott came in too, and it just changed out the quarterback play. And they had a lot of things go right. But very, very often, those teams that pick in those upper levels still have a lot of work to do. And I don't think the Falcons are there. And I think the fact that they're doing this right now proves that they're not. So, yeah, go
Oh,
ahead.
sorry. I just wanted to say, you know, another thing too is last year, you know, we made the playoffs and Julio Jones was, you know, he only had three touchdowns. He's already got seven this season. So you can definitely say he's bounced back, even, you know, even though the touchdowns wasn't that big of a deal, but he's definitely bounced back to, you know, quieting people on the whole, like, oh, Julio doesn't score front. And then Matt Ryan, you know, he last year I believe he had like 20 touchdowns. He's already at 33 and there's still a game left. So your stars Yeah, he had 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Right now, following this game, I believe he has 33 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So his touchdowns went up a lot, and his interceptions are half. Plus, he has 3 rushing touchdowns, which I'm not sure if he might have had one maybe last year. I don't know what his rushing touchdowns were, but my point being that your stars, who were good enough to somehow beat the Rams last year, they're back to their top performance level, and that's what you want to see, you know. And a lot of times people keep forgetting Devontae Freeman's been out, you know, like we still get Devontae Freeman back next year. Like I see a lot of people, you know, focus on the defense and say, oh, you know, Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen, but we're going to get Devontae Freeman back. And if for some reason Tevin Coleman's gone, maybe that means, you know, what I've always been hoping, that they just go not run Devontae Freeman 30 times a game, but give him over 20 carries or give him around 20 carries a game. You know, sometimes in the past they'd stop with, they'd try and do half season. Freeman would get like maybe 10 to 12. Maybe, you know, somewhere below 15. Sometimes running backs, they got to get their motor going. They got to get a couple carries in before they actually heat up. And I think that'll be good. But I definitely like seeing that Ryan and Julio have bounced back. And like I said, there's still a game to make those stats even better. And then just comparing his 2016 numbers, there's still, I mean, his touchdowns, he's thrown this season. He's already got 30 more passes than in 2016, but, you know, keep in mind we had a better run game. But his touchdowns are, he's, I think, 5 short of 2016. There's, again, there's still one more game. He's got less interceptions this year. He had 7 in 2016. He didn't have any rushing touchdowns in 2016, but he has 3 this year. And then his passing yards right now, he's at 4,546. In 2016, he was at 4,944. So was that like 402 yards he would need to tie it? So and it doesn't matter, even if he, you know, it's just something fun to think about. Like, he's really, you know, he's kind of back at 2016 level. So that's exciting, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. You need your stars to play well. I mean, when you're paying them that much money, you need this. I mean, this is the reason that they're getting paid what they are. And again, Julio is going to be due a pretty sizable contract extension in the spring. And you know this team is not going to want to have to deal with all that offseason. Mm-hmm. You know that they're going to want to get this taken care of now. And again, Julio is going to want it. I think he's going to look at these touchdown numbers and go, okay, here we go. This is, look what I do for you when you're not playing well. This is what I'm able to give you. Give me what I'm owed. And I was a pretty big supporter for him in the offseason, and I still am. Like, I think he deserves to be paid amongst the best players in the league. And Matt Ryan does too. And that's just what happens when you have these great guys. You got to pay them. And you might begrudge that and go, oh, we could use this money elsewhere and have other parts in, you know, whatever you want to say. But at the same time, there's no exact one formula for winning in the NFL. You win how you win. And with the Falcons, as they're built, they need Matt and Julio to play well, and they need to pay them well, so they're here for the long haul. There is a conversation that we need to have about our coordinators. Ian Rappaport reported this morning, again, kind of backing up the Tom Pelissero report about the coordinator changes that may be coming to Atlanta with Steve Sarkisian and Marquand Manuel. It looks like they're both out. I think that's probably what's going to happen. I don't know about Keith Armstrong, but I could see them making a change there. I don't really know of many special teams coaches, but the name that comes up in the offensive coordinator conversation more than once now is Darrell Bevell, who was in Seattle on their Super Bowl team. He and Quinn have been together before. A veteran play caller who has done some good things when he's had good players, but a guy that, if you look at his numbers historically, has not always had the most talent to work with, and seems to be a guy that sounds very Falcon-y to me. He tends to excel when he has everything he needs, and he doesn't really do well when he doesn't have everything he needs, which makes him sound like he would fit right in with how the team normally does. But do you like that connection there? Do you think Bevell would be the guy they could bring in if they indeed move on from Sark? Or do you think that this is a move that they need to avoid?
I mean, I don't really have a strong opinion on Bevell. You know, he's worked with quarterbacks such as Brett Favre, who, I mean, Brett Favre's his own entity. He can handle himself, but like Tavares Jackson, Russell Wilson, obviously. You know, I don't really have – for me, it's kind of like at that, if it's between – like, do I think the Falcons should get a different offensive coordinator? Yeah, because they're that good to where I could probably come up with, you know, something that gets Julio or somebody else in the end zone. Like, I think it's easy to give Sark a lot of credit because he's you know, he's had a good season with a fantastic offense. You know, the difference with Shanahan was Shanahan completely ran with it, so to speak. Probably the, you know, no pun intended there, but he took this fire, this powerhouse offense and blew the top off, you know, best in the league in 2016. So I think if you got like, you need to kind of get like an, and it's easier said than done, you need an offensive genius in there who can really like make everybody do, you know, excellent things like Sark or like Shanahan was able to do, where Sark is like, you know, he's going to get the job done, I think. I think he's obviously taken a big step, you know, since last year. And again, we made the playoffs and, you know, beat the we were arguably like a play or two away from the NFC Championship. So it's hard to be like 2017 was a complete bust. But if you're saying, oh, would you rather have Bevel or Sark? I'm taking Sark all the time because I don't want to see Matt Ryan have to get a whole nother offensive coordinator. Like, I didn't agree with hiring Sark to begin with because I, you know, I mentioned it on Twitter. I felt it was kind of like giving the keys of a Ferrari to a teenager. Like, they're just going to probably, like, you know, hit a pole or something, you know, crash it off the road or something. Like, it's too much car for that, to where you need to get somebody in there who knows, you know, you got to get a Jeff Gordon or Earnhardt in there who knows how to drive it. So, you know, he's had a year. I think he's done enough this year where that's not a big deal to me. I definitely would like to see a change on special teams. I don't know. It's just been so, I don't know. I think Armstrong gets a little more credit than he probably deserves. But, you know, like seeing like Andre Roberts, we let him go and he's been having like a great year. So it's like, you know, at what point do you go, okay, something ain't right on special teams, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm not really on board with the whole Bevel thing, but you know, I'd prefer to see this. For some reason, it seems like we've been going in a direction where it's like, we'll take former buddies or former Seahawks or, you know, people who Pete Carroll knows, like, let's just do something crazy and get Kubiak or something, you know? That's more where I'm headed, but at that point, I'm fine with keeping Sark.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against it, but I think right now, the two things with Sark that bother me are that he's never coached well against excellent defensive play calling, except for one game against Washington. And I think that Washington's defense has taken a sizable step back. They have a very good defense, but, and that's the only time where I've ever seen Sark really, I think, coach against a really good team and do a really good job coaching against one of these really good defenses. Because I think you look at like that stretch where they just were terrible. It was Cleveland, Dallas, New Orleans, Baltimore, Green Bay. Those all had seasoned defensive minds. Okay. You got Greg Williams. Then you've got, is it Rod Marinelli that runs the defense in Dallas? I think that's who it is.
So the defense. Yeah. I was thinking offense. I think that's Linehan or whatever.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Scott Linehan's their offensive coordinator. And then, so you've got Marinelli and then you go to Dennis Allen and then you've got, Baltimore's defense, who had historically been run by Dean Pease and who they really built one of the probably the best defenses in the NFL right now. So that's just talent alone.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you go to Green Bay and Mike Pettine. Those are all guys who are, I don't want to say smarter than Sarkisian, but they have way more NFL experience than he does. Mm-hmm. And they have talent. And again, Green Bay's defense is not very good, but they definitely looked good against you know, the Falcons. And again, I don't want to let the offensive line off because outside of Jake and Alex Mack, they've looked really poor this year. And they've already changed out half of their the entire right side of their line has had multiple changes this year. So you can just tell that there are problems that are beyond the coaching. But that's something Shanahan did, is he coached up the talent that was there. Like some had noted, he was able to disguise a lot of those coaching, you know, those talent problems with his ability to coach, which definitely helped, because Atlanta's never had an amazing offensive line, but he made them look amazing. And then I think you look at, you know, that stretch, and the offense didn't do anything for like 5 weeks. And it was because I think they were going against these seasoned defensive minds, and Sark wasn't really able to get a grasp of them. And again, the talent wasn't there on the offensive line, and that really hurt. But the whole team got out of a funk, and I don't know. It's very difficult to exactly peg it on one guy, but I think that that's been Sark's problem the entire time he's been here, is that he always struggles against going against these great defensive minds, and that's something Shanahan could do. And if you're going to have a winning NFL team, you're going to have to do that. You know, again, they almost went to the NFC Championship with Sark. I'm not saying if they kept him, it'd be a bad thing. I've really was a pretty big fan of his up until this stretch, but I think the stretch has confirmed some of those lingering fears that you have about him as a play caller, is that he just really can't quite, you know, muster up the mental prowess to be able to go against the best of the best. And that's what you've got to have if you want to be one of the best offenses in the league. And again, these hot play callers are really, really popular, but at the same time, you've got to have the prowess to go against the best defenses, because if you do, the great offenses don't really matter when it comes down to it, and you're trying to contend for a championship, which I think Atlanta still really has in their hopes, is to go back and compete for a Super Bowl with this team. And I think they can, but at the same time, you just got to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward, and whether that's with Sark or not, we'll have to see. The defensive conversation's a little tougher, because I think Manuel had a really good defense last year. Some people say it was a little overrated. This year, clearly, it's shown that they have to have their talent to succeed, that the coaching is not there to cover up where the talent isn't. And I've long felt that Dan Quinn needs to call the plays. I don't think he ever will. So I hope that they go get a guy, if they let Manuel go, that is able to properly coach this defense and not just rely on talent alone. There has to be a marriage of talent and coaching for them to be successful. And I think the Falcons have really tried to ride on that too long, is that we want to have the best, we're going to beat you with talent. And I think that they have to balance those two out. So that's
let
where
me ask
we're
you
at.
This. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I just wanted to see what do you think? So you think they should go outside of the, I guess you could say, Pete Carroll bubble?
Here's my thing. I'm with the Bevel hire, having looked at some of his stats, because I think he would be would be successful. I think it would be like when they brought Dirk Cutter in 2012, where it's just a veteran offensive mind who is coming into a good situation, and he'll be successful because of that.
Okay.
And they would benefit from that. But I'm also
Cutter might be available too.
He might be. I know there are some rumblings they may keep him, but there are also some rumblings he may not be kept, which is,
well, if the Falcons destroy them next week, that might help.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, maybe that would send it. But I think Cutter's a good play caller, but he may be more of a, when everything's going right, he's well, and when everything's not going well, he's not. It's very difficult because Tampa Bay's offense is, as numbers wise, really good this year. The team's not very good, but they're putting up outstanding numbers. So I don't know exactly what you do with that. That's a very interesting conversation. Because it's like
that's why the Bevel thing. I think you're right about the Bevel. Like I don't really have a strong opinion on it. But I think with the Bevel thing is, if you look, a lot of the staff have a connection somewhere in the past with Dan Quinn. You know, because Shanahan really didn't, right? He didn't really have a connection with Dan Quinn anywhere in the past. But, you know, now we've kind of, like, Sarkisian, you know, and then Manuel, and, you know, the list goes on to, like, even just, like, linebacker coaches and stuff. So that's why I think the Bevel thing makes more sense, because I think Dan Quinn's – I'm not saying he's hiring buddies, but it's definitely people he's familiar with. And you know, and Pete Carroll's familiar with, like, in that realm of the Pete Carroll coaching tree, so to speak. So I think that's probably the more likely, if that's assuming they do make a move, is probably Bevel.
Yeah, I'm not against it at all. I think that Quinn likes to hire guys that he's comfortable with. I think if you look at defensive coordinators, you look at Chris Richard, who is the defensive back coach in in Dallas. He's done a really good job there building that secondary up, and they have experience together, of course, and I'm sure he'd love to have a coordinator job. I'm looking at right now for the defensive coordinator spot, or I think they could promote Jeff Ulbrich, who's done just such a phenomenal job with Atlanta's linebacker. But I think the best case scenario for them is Dan Quinn calling the plays and hiring a guy and maybe promoting someone internally that can keep the culture there. And maybe that's Manuel. And I don't think that would be a bad move at all, is to keep Manuel as the defensive coordinator in name and keep him in that locker room as a coach, but to also take the play calling himself. I think that's the best move they could make, because it would make Dan Quinn the team's defensive coordinator and head coach. But I don't know. But Dan Quinn has never seemed to want to do that. And the only time he did that, they went to a Super Bowl and played really well. So I don't know why he has such a friction with that idea, but, you know, we'll have to see. But,
so if you were running things, would you make the move on, if you could only pick one to fire, would it be, or to replace, I should say, offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, or special teams? If you only can make move one.
I would say offensive coordinator, because I just think that Sark has a ceiling. And I think that at the pro level, he just kind of is what he is. But I think he's a better college coach. I think he'd be a wonderful college coach, because what he does well, I think, fits more the college game. And I think he would be welcome with open arms back in that community. But at the same time, I just don't know exactly if he can be an elite play caller. And I think that you should always get the best talent at this type of job. So I would probably say Sark, because I'm not against Manuel coming back, because I think that if they did that, that Quinn would take over play calling. But, you know, if he doesn't want to take over the play calling, I'd probably switch them both out. But, you know, it's just, it's difficult. But with this team, you just can't accept being almost good enough. You know, they're just too talented, and the window's too short. So I would try to get as much out of I can with this roster, maybe some fresh ideas. Like, really, I think this team could use a little bit of a refresher from a coaching standpoint, because the pieces are there. I mean, we all know that they outside of some trench work, they've got the pieces they need. I just think that right now they really need to focus on maximizing the coaching that they have. So I think that's it, man. I think we've, I don't want to spoil our Christmas too much with Falcon talk. We'd love to do it, but we've got other Christmassy things to think about now. Evan,
only one more week.
One more week, man. We got Tampa Bay heading down to the Bay Area, and not that Bay Area, the other Tampa Bay, the Southern Bay Area in Florida, to see if they can end the season with a win or head to 6-10. Since we're rhyming, Evan, thank you so much for coming on as always, and let everybody know where they can find you on social media and what you're working on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, and you know, you've done a great job with the post game this year, so look forward to hearing it next year. And you can find me on Twitter at Evan Birchfield, where I pretty much talk about, well, fantasy football's over, but I'll probably still talk about it next week. So fantasy football, and obviously the Falcons, and then I'm writing on the Falcoholic, so you can find me there too. And then if you have Instagram, I'm running the Falcoholic's official Instagram account, and it's at the_Falcoholic. So
yes, Evan is doing a great job with the social media, and it's great to have him on the team fulfilling that role and also doing articles as well. So Evan, thank you so much for coming on the show. You can find me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47, of course, and find all my ramblings over at The Falcoholic. And be sure to subscribe to all of the podcast potentials that we have on our many podcast platforms, and tune back for our season finale next week. We've got one more episode before we put this post-game podcast to bed for the 2017-18 year, not 17. I think I've got a fun guest in the works for that one, a guy that we've had on before that I always love to talk with about the Falcons. So we'll keep you in the loop on that. But other than that, you know, make sure you listen to all of our podcasts. Dave and Dave comes on sometimes, but DW and Gina do a great job over on the flagship show, and then on Crossfire as well. They've got some nice stuff going there. So be sure to listen to those shows and subscribe on all of our many platforms to those, and let us know what you think about them and the reviews. And read The Falcoholic, follow us on Twitter and social media, Facebook, Instagram. Like Evan said, we're always happy to have your readership and your support. We appreciate it very much. And we thank you for it, and happy holidays to all of you. Thank you guys so much for spending some of your holiday time with us to think about the Falcons, and we will we will see you next week to close out 2018. I believe it will be about New Year's Eve when we are posting our very last year episode of the season. So we'll have to let you know how it goes next week. But thank you so much for listening. We appreciate your time. See ya.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.